Welcome to the workshop, What to Expect from Coaches. This is Brent Rushall and I'll be talking to you for the next couple of hours. You should have in front of you the workbook that you've downloaded from the internet. If you have not done this already, then I would ask that you do so before proceeding. This presentation is divided into three parts, each having a particular emphasis. The first part involves seven principles for coaching elite athletes. Elite athletes here are professional athletes or athletes at the national level. However, these principles can also be applied to lesser level athletes, at least if they are serious about their sport. The advocacy is that these seven principles should be the basis upon which coaching is formed and coaching is evaluated. The second part of the workshop looks at features that underlie the effectiveness of a coaching system. So when one is a head coach, these are the factors that need to be adhered to and followed in order to be really effective. The third part involves coaching behaviors which indicate a degradation of coaching effort and effectiveness. These are the things that a coach should not do. The factors described are based on research, and occasionally there will be some descriptions of the sorts of research that underlie the factors which are discussed. So let's now proceed with the first part of the presentation. You should be looking at page 4 of the workbook. In this section, we'll talk about the seven principles of applied psychology and their impact on coaching. The original article of these seven principles is appended to this section in your workbook. Although it is some 20 years old, it is just as relevant today as it was then. Coaching has not progressed very much since those days. The first principle is the principle of specificity. Essentially, the principle of specificity says that the more that a task is practiced, the better becomes the performance. When a performance becomes better, it either becomes less variable or better in quality. Since most sports are skill-oriented, that is, neuromuscular patterns dominate the quality of performance, the main impact is on neuromuscular training or adaptation, and this may well be the most important form of training despite the current emphasis on looking at physical conditioning. Neuromuscular training or skill training is more important than physical fitness training. If one is superbly fit but poorly skilled, then one cannot perform at a very high level. There are several sub-factors within this principle of specificity. The first one is task difficulty. As I discuss this topic, there is a diagram on page 11 of your workbook to which this is relevant. In the past, coaches have failed to realize the complexity of physical activities. Activities need many trials to achieve a satisfactory level of performance. And when we talk about trials, we're not talking about hundreds of trials or 100 practices per session. We're probably getting up into the level of millions of trials. This is why the most highly skilled athletes are usually those who are mature, that is, well into their 20s, although that does not apply to the supernatural athletes who already have a good skill basis. There is a tendency amongst coaches to try and quantify skill difficulty. For example, if a task is performed over a particular distance, doubling the distance is quite often assumed to be doubling the difficulty of the task. That is not true. When one changes the distance over which a skill is performed, or the intensity with which a skill is performed, the skill is changed. they are not the same skills. Quite often I hear of coaches having athletes perform at 75% effort or over 75% of the performance distance, the assumption being that such a skill is 75% of the target skill. When one assumes to perform a similar skill at a different distance or intensity, one should really interpret that as being a different skill. The neuromuscular functions are different. The way the muscles coordinate with each other and the intensity of their contraction is a very fine and developed skill in itself. And so any alteration away from the competition-specific intensity or distance is going to cause a change in the skill. So when we often believe that we are training for a particular performance by doing modifications of the target performance of a competition, we quite often are training irrelevant skills. Please turn to page 11 of your workbook. The diagram is that of ring tossing and is research that was done over half a century ago. It is just as valid today as it was in those days. What has happened here is that the ring tossing is where one stands with a number of rings and tries to throw them on a peg. At the 2 foot distance, one is not very far from the peg, and having 10 such rings, it is a matter of just dropping the rings virtually on the peg. The subjects in this study did make some errors, and that's why perfect performance was not attained until after 2 blocks of practice. Now, when the distance was increased by 50%, the difficulty of the task was not changed by 50%. The same subjects at the initial outset could only achieve 3 out of the 10 rings on the peg. But after 100 trials, they still were not performing at the level that was the initial level at 2 feet. When the distance was then extended to 6 feet, the initial performance of the subjects dropped even further, down to just slightly over 1 out of 10 pegs on the average achieved in the first set of trials. After 100 trials, the final performance at 6 feet had just reached the initial level that was achieved at 3 feet. And then when another 3 feet of increased distance was incurred, we see that the rate of learning, or the rate of skill development, and the initial skill level and the final skill level were all lower than at any of the previous distances. The best interpretation of these data is that each level of difficulty or skill change was not the same skill. Even though the ring toss looked reasonably similar to a naive observer, the performance characteristics under each condition of the experiment indicated that each alteration produced a new task with little relationship to the previous stage. Although simple descriptive similarities existed between each task, they were, to all intents and purposes, different skills. It is this type of effect and type of difference which occurs with modifications in competition-specific skills. So one needs to look at the task difficulty that is being incurred at practice. Are athletes being exposed to trials that will replicate conditions that will exist in competitive situations so that they can get better at the sorts of things that will be required for them to perform in a competition? Please return to page 4 of the workbook. The implications of the research on task difficulty are several. The first is that the greater the number of departures from the contest action, the less valuable will be the training. So competition-specific practices will allow training effects to carry over into competitions. Non-competition-specific training will not carry over into competitions. The second implication is that exposures to a skill are not sufficient for learning or appreciation. The number of practices needs to be many, many trials, possibly in the hundreds of thousands, rather than occasional exposures to the skills themselves. Third implication is that athletes will only get satisfaction, that is, develop an approach response to the sport, when positive outcomes are achieved. And positive outcomes usually relate to competitive settings. So the quality of training and preparation for competitions is one of the things that will develop an athlete's motivation towards a sport. Let me repeat again. The number of trials at practice needs to be much more than is commonly made available to athletes. We should be thinking in the hundreds to thousands of repetitions at a practice session of a skill rather than in the tens. The final implication of this particular principle is that time-consuming, irrelevant training needs to be reduced or eliminated. Any skill practices that are not related to competitions are wasted practice skills. They reduce the opportunity for effective and appropriate training, and by reducing that opportunity means that athletes will not be prepared in a competition to the level that they could be. This completes part one of topic one, correctly by many coaches.